No one watches this, right? Like, this is like an audio only thing.
No, people do watch it as well.
I'm going to break the fourth wall the whole time.
Barrel Maker Printing. Justin Moore on today, diving deep into live printing, profit first, how he's using it, and how he's scaling the business. Also, he mentioned seeing a bit of a dip in retail sales. Just kind of sub 50 shirt orders over the last few years, mainly he feels due to DTF shops and new DTF shops coming into the market. So we dive into all that. That's kind of interesting. Thanks for listening to this episode. We've got a couple amazing partners that we got to share with you and that you guys should check out too, because they help support this episode every single week.
Bruce, you've heard of Multicraft underscore daddy. If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices and the best dad videos on Instagram. Dave just did a video on the history of screen printing and the patron saints of screen printing, and it was dad worthy. So mention the Printavo podcast, you'll receive an extra 10% off your first order, and Dave gives away a free case of PMI tape for every episode. You just have to DM him, first time customers only, Multicraft underscore daddy.
Graphics Pro Expo. It is coming in August. It's right around the corner. They've launching a huge show in Long Beach. Graphics Pro Expo in Long Beach is August 21st to 23rd. You get 50% off your tickets, by the way, if you use the code HUSTLERS, all caps, HUSTLERS. That gets you 50% off your registration fee. You go to graphics-pro-expo.com and you'll see the link down in the description. You can click it. They've got an incredible show again. They've got the latest in screen printing. This is a big one. They've got DTF, embroidery, a bunch more, plus a really cool Graphics Pro University. So they've got a lot of experts there. They're doing a ton of training. We'll be there. A bunch of the Inktable team members will be there. So check it out, graphics-pro-expo.com. GraphX Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphX Source offers industry-leading options for your shop. Campus Inc's rocking with 3-4 or so artists to be able to help with production art, creative art, order management, digitizing, and some customer service. But really, that production art is huge for Campus Inc. They've been around for over 40 years, so they've really been helping so many shops, and they've plug and play with Printavo, which is really, really cool. Steven's been to their facility and I've seen photos of just like so many Printavo monitors open and people uploading art, changing statuses. So that's pretty cool. Printavo24. That's the code. Printavo pod 24, 50% off your first vector set or digitized order.
Bruce, EasyWay is launching a new monthly giveaway. So if you're spending hours cleaning dirty screens, that is a thing of the past. They have a new monthly giveaway program to give back to their amazing customers. Each month, they're going to be giving away a $250 prize. Go to easyway.com/giveaway. Make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with EasyWay systems, chemicals, and equipment. And head to easyway.com/giveaway. It is the easiest way.
Welcoming our new partner, Stahls. If you are ready to take custom apparel to the next level, Stahls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that's scaling, Stahls makes the hustle easier. We're here so you can simply heat press and profit. Stahls has an incredible amount of offerings. If you go to their website, stahls.com, you could just browse through, you can get samples, try it. Also, you could see them at a ton of trade shows as well, which is really cool. Use the code word HUSTLER20, HUSTLER20. That gets you 20% off your next DTF transfer order. Give it a try. Not only that, but as you know, they've got an incredible amount of equipment in addition to the transfers, but they really support your business. The team there is incredible, super nice, and they have great support. So check it out, stahls.com. Use that code HUSTLER20. Printprofit.com. We've had Nick G from Print Profit on the podcast a couple times. This thing is powerful. If you're looking to understand profitability in real time as the month goes on and not just wait till the books are closed at the end of the month, this tool can really, really be helpful. They've got some incredible analytics around profitability for your business. It plugs into Printavo. It's got costs that you've entered in. It's got your sales you've entered in. And it's really like your profitability co-pilot. You can run your shop with confidence, knowing exactly where to focus to close better deals, increase margins, and grow profitability every day. But really cool though, go to primprofit.com and you can get a free profit audit done on your shop. So check that out. Worst case, I mean, that's an incredible way to see where you are at. All right, let's jump on in. Justin, you look good. You got the necklace on too, the Zuckerberg necklace?
Yeah, it's the Mark Zuckerberg special edition. It's got a Meta thing on it. And if you put on the goggles, it like does all this crazy stuff.
And the button up. I like it.
Does he wear... No, it's got no sleeves.
Trendy. Buffalo Grove trendiest.
Yeah, there you go.
You're trying to rival Culture Studio boys, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My yacht. My fucking new... You got, my new yacht is so huge. How big's their yacht? Like 70 feet?
I think bigger than yours.
No, mine's like 190.
In Lake Michigan?
I have MJ's old yacht.
You can Airbnb MJ's house in Lake Forest now.
I saw that place.
It's so crazy how long that sat on the market, but it's like really niche. So
right. I don't know. And I guess he just doesn't care.
I'm assuming he could float it. He could get by, yeah. Right?
So Justin, we had Zach on the podcast. Zach works at Barrelmaker, and he was so good that you got jealous.
That's true. Hold on, I'm blocking this screen. That's even worse. No one watches this, right? Like this is like an audio only thing.
No, people do watch it as well.
I'm gonna break the fourth wall the whole time. Do you guys like that? Look at the camera. Talk to.
I try to do that, but it's hard because
hey, screen printers. Yeah, I got jealous of Zach. Well, mostly I feel like if he's out there representing us, I have to balance it out a little bit, you know, like we're not the Benihana of, or whatever the fuck he said, of hibachi of, you know, screen printing.
I think the big takeaway that everyone also, you know, could feel for is the hiring difficulty, the figuring out who's a good fit, especially on the sales end. Getting them ramped up in a way where they're comfortable talking to a customer on their own as quickly as possible, and how he likes to do that, which is probably ever evolving. Like you're always trying to improve or shorten that process, or like, ah, shoot, they didn't get this or that.
I got kind of removed from hiring people a long time ago. So
are you bad at it?
That's fair. I'm a very big personality hire person. I'm just like, ah, yeah, okay, you have cool hair, or like, you're wild looking. Let's do it. You know, actually, like, I don't know if Zach told you about like how I hired him at all. Did he tell that story?
No.
Was it hair?
No. Like he didn't even say the name right. He was like, hey, is Barrel Monkey hiring? And I'm like, fuck you, dude. But, he came in for an interview, and I do this shit all the time, but I double scheduled him and another like sales guy at the same time. But Zach showed up a little bit early, like maybe like 10 minutes before. And his girlfriend at the time was like friends with my wife a little bit through like some like side group type thing. And so I like knew a little bit of about him. And I also knew SharpRent, you know, and that he did some stuff there, but he came in early and we chatted for a bit. And then I was like, oh, this guy came in with like a suit, and like, you saw like our old space. Like if you go into our old spot with like a suit, like you're really like standing out, like pretty weird, you know? And so I was like, fuck, I double booked it. And I was like, I don't want to deal with this. Like, do you want to just interview the guy? And he gave the guy the tour that I like just gave him and showed him around and taught, like pretended like he worked there. And I was like, I guess at this point, like we should probably just hire you. So yeah.
That's amazing. And also, your wife has said the exact same thing about you, at the detriment of you hiring people that you just like their
Are you lighting
qualities.
A match?
Yeah. I'm lighting a match in the match head that on fire just landed. It like went under.
Are you just going to just get a stogie or your old man pipe? Or
I'm lighting some candles. I'm big on ambiance. I like my son came to work with me the other day. He kept asking to come to work. And I'm like, dude, I don't know what you think I do. it's not fun. Like I mostly sit at a desk and light like incense and candles and just kind of like go into like flow state for like an hour and then I leave.
What does your day look like?
That's it. That's my day. Okay, for real. Hold on. Let me actually get this candle lit. What's my day look like?
I've got a candle here too. Should we?
Yeah, you know what? Speaking of candles, have you guys been to Fret 12 in Salt Shed?
No.
It's really nice. You go to Salt Shed though, right? Like
Steven, yeah, you've been there. There's like all these little stores.
Such a good venue. They have really good merch too, by the way.
Another shop does it.
We outsource it to another shop.
Yeah, what's funny is Justin, you spoke at Print Hustlers, I think the second one, about hiring. And you said, like, don't train them well and they quit. Don't train them and they stay.
Well, it's like, yeah, it was like, that was a big thing. Yeah, it's like, what if you train, like, spend too much time training them or whatever, and then they leave? And then it's like, what if you don't and they stay? Yeah, it's profound. I mean, it's true, though. It's like a big, I mean, that's, you can't bring people on with the expectation that they're not going to stay. Like, you need to treat them, you know, as though they're going to be there for a while. They have to like learn the processes. You have to like show them your processes and really like work to make people part of the team. Otherwise they're not going to become a part of the team ever, you know? So I found that there's, you know, for me, like in terms of like hiring, I do it mostly based on if I'm just comfortable talking to somebody. I would say like 90, like in terms of you ask like what I do, but I think like the bulk of my job is delegation. So for me, I found that like I need just people that I'm actually comfortable delegating to. And I kind of noticed there's like some people who like aren't as confident or are like a little more timid. I don't do well assigning stuff to them because I kind of like feel bad or something, you know, like I need to know that like, hey, I could give you a job and then later in the day or the next day, I'm going to have more stuff that pops up. And even though maybe you didn't finish that job, I'm going to start like tacking on things. Like I'm big on, delegating. I'm big on keeping people busy.
How do you test for that though? Like how do you, okay, personality, their personality is good, right? Like they're whatever. How do you test? Is that something you really focus on in their first week of like, do they understand delegation? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think like I've noticed it's more than anything. It's just hiring people that have some confidence, like make good eye contact, like how they present themselves. Like, I don't know. I mean, I've been in interviews of people that end up, you know, they seem really cool on paper, but then they like can't really look at you or they're taking, you know, too long to answer kind of like a basic question and whatnot. And so I think for me, it's an intuitive thing. Like I said, like I don't hire anymore because I've definitely brought in some riffraff. And Zach is much more focused on having like standards to hiring. Like Zach does like to go through like a series of questions that I, you know, kind of like, I don't really do that. I talk about myself for like an hour and then I'm like, yeah, they were cool.
Hilarious.
What else do you do during the day?
Okay, what do I do? So I typically at this juncture in my life, I know
you do some like profit first things, like you like allocate stuff. I know you do a lot of sales.
I do sales, yeah. I do sales every day. Every day I do sales. Okay, so I've kind of shifted. I used to be much more of like an early riser. Like I used to really enjoy getting in the shop like kind of like before like six and kind of like liked that like sort of peaceful like place where like being there before production. Our production, yeah, but that was like before, that was, it's been a long time now. Like our production here starts at six. Some people are here at like 5:30. So that kind of stopped. And then, you know, I do have three kids. And so I kind of like, got into this like dropping them off at school thing. I'm dad bus and dad bus is late. So dad bus actually didn't know that school started at like 8:10. Dad bus thought school started at 8:20 for like the whole year. It was one day I was like talking to the principal and she was like, yeah, you guys don't need to be late every day. I was like, dude, what time does it start? And she's like, you have a kid that literally just graduated high school. I was like, okay. So I do know now what time school starts, but so I kind of like sleep in. I sort of wake up. I'm a bad sleeper. So I wake up usually at like 3 or 4 in the morning and I do my profit first allocations. So like I wake up and the first thing I kind of do is check the bank account and see what's what. And I transfer, you know, with like profit first, there are a lot of bank accounts. I think we have like maybe like, you know, 6 core accounts that we really use. And I actually like have delegated out this job twice and then pulled it back because there's still like, I don't have it like perfect enough to where I could give it to somebody else because our money comes in from different places. Right. So like for me, I could look really quickly and be like, okay, well, this $20,000 came from a live event that we already did. This like, you know, this $10,000 is actually part of a hoodie order that's going to have, you know, $9,000 worth of sweatshirts, you know, so it's not the same. I know Profit First works on like kind of general percentages. But in real time, I've noticed like that doesn't work as well. So basically what I do is I just take like a minute, you know, and I like kind of transfer everything over. I usually have an idea of like where I want our payroll account to be. Payroll accounts are always my number one focus. So it's sort of like, you know, if we just hit payroll, I usually go heavy right away on refilling the payroll account. And then kind of hit the OPEX, which our OPEX is really like, I do every day, which I think is crazy. Probably I'd really like to not do that, but I also, it kind of keeps me, it's how I know how we're doing on a daily basis, you know? And there's like, it's crazy. Like, I mean, there's times where I'm like, shit, we're just like, I'll feel like nothing happened in a day. And then I'll like wake up at 3 in the morning and check the account and there will be like, you know, 120 grand of like ACHs and stuff like that. And I'm like, sick, we did something, you know? And so it's how I know where we're at. And it really like, it really genuinely only takes about a minute. So it's like, it's very easy for me to like make those delegations. You know, if I know that we're getting heavy payments from a contract customer, I'll usually go a little bit heavier on what goes into like our savings account, because I know that I don't have expenses to pay with that other than, you know, payroll or whatever, but I'll hit it heavier on the savings. Cause then I know, you know, at some point, basically our savings account has like a couple automatic withdrawals that go into like, you know, another type of savings account, a brokerage account. So we use our savings account basically to fund a brokerage account that like invests money for the business and grow, like kind of that's the money that we don't have like quick access to, you know.
Justin, how long have you been doing this habit, this daily profit first habit?
Since I started it like the week after I read the book, which was like maybe a year before, maybe a year or so before he was at Print Hustlers.
Like 2017.
So I'm not sure. Yeah. So maybe, yeah.
Wow. So like, you, I mean, it was 8 years of profit first, just like daily habits.
Yeah. And I don't like our accountant is actually like, she, or not our accountant, our bookkeeper is like, I mean, she's like a profit first bookkeeper. Like that's like one of their, it's part. Oh yeah. We had the same one for a while. Yeah. Yeah. So like,
it's Sparks I think Sparks Profit First.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. And I think like she does, or they do like delegations for a lot of people. Just for me, like, I don't know. I can't, it's kind of the one thing I can't let go of. So anyways, I start my day.
No, that was good in the profit first, but I know then you spend so much time on the sales part. Like, what are you doing there?
4 a.m. profit first, drop the kids off.
Yeah. Yeah, I do profit first. I watch videos of people sailing solo across the world.
Oh, Phoenix. Sailing with Phoenix.
Love that shit. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'll do that. Then I'll fall back asleep for like an hour. Then I, you know, protein shake. I do a lot of caffeine. So I usually have like 2 cold brews. Then I drop the kids off. Then I get, you know, Starbucks. Then I go to the gym for like an hour, and then I come here for a little bit. So typically, like when I get here, I'll try and just catch up with, I don't know, see what's going on, catch up with people. I usually set like, I do a lot of email. Ooh, dude, that was good. I do a lot of email reaching out to customers on a daily basis. So I try and find kind of a mix of customers that we, you know, haven't worked with for a while, or that maybe I haven't communicated with. You know, I'm not like the point of contact for most of our customers. So a lot of times it's just like reaching out. I do this like assumed, like kind of like we're, I like assume that we're friends because they work with Barrelmaker, but they don't like know me. So a lot of times I'll just kind of reach out and just be like, hey, how's it going? You know, anything I could help out with? And, you know, just real, like really loose. So I try and do that. And, you know, I have a lot of drip campaigns and whatnot set up. So there's a lot of automated emails that happen already. So I don't focus on that typically. I just try and every day do a little bit of like people, customers that are in our database, just kind of staying, you know, trying to get in touch with people, make like some sort of connection. I also like don't have that thing in me where like, I don't mind reaching out to people that don't like us or that had a bad experience with us or like that don't use us anymore. So I typically will like also like make an effort to be
like, is that like people who ordered something within?
Yeah. Yeah. So like within Nutshell, like I kind of like Nutshell is like our CRM. And it basically I'll run like reports and sift through like, you know, a couple things. Sometimes I'll sift through like people that I haven't contacted within a certain period of time. That's a pretty big list. Like we've been around long enough to where we have quite a few customers. So I could, you know, even if I'm just going through people that I haven't contacted, there's enough to like reach out to every day, you know?
So what I'm hearing is like, you kind of have these daily habits of like, you still have designed a life that you want, but you're like, the first thing I do in the morning is I wake up and I make sure there's money in the bank, kind of like a Warren Buffett thing. Like that's how my day is going to be. Am I getting Dunkin' or Starbucks?
I mean, I pull like, I'm like a single owner. Like I don't have, I mean, my wife and I own the business together. I don't have partners or anything too. So like, you know, this isn't like as traditional, but like if I have a huge day, like I could pull a distribution that morning and be like, yeah, maybe I'm going to go, you know, to Chicago Music Exchange today and check out some amps or something, you know, like you were saying, yeah, Dunkin' or Starbucks, but also like sometimes I'm like, oh, it's a good day to like, you know, maybe take a little bonus.
Nice. And then it's like sales focus. It's like, I'm going to go poke and prod in the business and try and like shake a couple trees.
Yeah. So I really just like being at my desk a lot. Like I'm a big, like to get up close to a computer. I feel real comfortable that way. So I'll kind of like do that. And typically I'll respond to like I said, we use just G chat throughout the day with like our team. So I usually just try and help out. Like if, you know, if someone has a question about maybe a situation that's happening or whatever, and kind of in between doing that, I usually like do some sales stuff. And then I also kind of have another side of me where I really like doing design work. Like I like to do, you know, I'm not like the best like illustrator, but I do like to mess with, you know, our websites and, you know, postcards, flyers, like even like all of our any sort of like SOPs or processes that we have. I always like to make them like, I feel like we have a pretty strong aesthetic for our brand, and I like to like kind of make sure everything looks nice. That's sort of like where my creative outlet a little bit, you know? And so, I do that a little bit and then I come and go.
Does the sales stuff, does that work? That drums up, you know, interest and, oh, wait, we almost forgot we need to blah, blah, blah.
I think so. I mean, I've definitely had people who like have written me back and they're like, oh, you know, that last order didn't go so well. Here's what happened, you know? And I'm like, usually quick to, you know, try and either like offer them, you know, discount to give us another shot or see if I could maybe like understand like why maybe that happened, you know, not necessarily trying to solve it like internally, but even just with the customer, maybe it's like, I mean, there's like surprisingly a lot of times where people don't really look at mock-ups and stuff too. So, I mean, I've seen quite a few times where someone gets upset over something that, like, if they actually looked at a mock-up would have, like, you know.
Do you feel like, Justin, you spending a little bit of time in sales every day, it obviously generates new business, but does it set a precedent at Barrelmaker of, like, the CEO is selling every day? This is how we operate. Like, are you leading by example? Is it, cause like you have a sales team, like, you know, you have a big team that does this.
I think so. I, you know, it's hard to know for sure how people who work for you always like feel about you. You know, I mean, I think it's like, it's a little bit of a tough dynamic, but I would be like, I'd be pretty shocked if there's like anyone here that like doesn't think that I work hard on Barrelmaker every day. Like I have a little bit of like, you know, I think like the desire to make the company successful, you know, doesn't like, hasn't like gone away for me. So it's like, I always kind of think that like, I mean, if we have one bad day, I'm like, man, it's the end, like it's over, you know? And then I get really motivated to like, start trying to like, go really heavy on sales or like start thinking about like, okay, how are we going to cut some expenses? You know, so I think it's pretty clear that I'm like focused and dedicated on it. I definitely though with that point, like when I used to go in really early, I think a lot of that was with the focus of like, it was like the mindset of like, I want people to know that I'm the first one here and the last one to leave. You know, like I felt like that was important. And now I physically, I'm not always like here as much, but I'm like always accessible. Like I, you know, I respond to things late at night. Like I don't think there's anyone that has like trouble like getting a hold of me if they need something.
Over the years, just as we've known each other, there's been times in Barrelmaker's history where you've said, we're at a good spot. Like, I feel like we're at a good spot right now. Do you think you're there now?
Yeah, I do. I think like, this last year is really interesting because, you know, we have a really pretty diverse customer base. So that helps us quite a bit. You know, there's times we're really very contract heavy, and then there's times we're like more retail heavy. We've seen our live printing side, right? You know, I think I was just telling Steven this like a couple weeks ago. We're like right now at the cusp where like live printing's pretty close to passing in-house decoration in terms of revenue. And that's like, you know, my goal is to get there at some point, but I like didn't, you know, the last kind of year or so that's really grown. I mean, I think last year was like, it was like triple, you know, the year before. And then this year we're like, I have a feeling we'll end up this year like double last year, you know? So we're just seeing growth at a way higher level than sort of like our, I guess I refer to them as like Barrelmaker and then live printing, but you know, on the Barrelmaker side, like we've never had a year that's worse than the previous year, but our growth is never crazy. Like it's pretty, you know, it's typically like around 5 to like 10% growth every year. It's never been like, you know, like, oh, we did 1 million this year and then next year we did 2 and then we did 4 and whatever. It's always like, you know, it's like, okay, we hit 1 million and then it was like 1,000,003 and then, you know, 1,000,005 and then 2 million, you know, kind of like that. So it's been steady. On the live side, it's been more explosive, which is pretty cool.
So everyone that understands that doesn't know Justin runs Barrelmaker Printing, but also liveprinting.com. And liveprinting.com is putting on events all across the country, maybe the world. And they're like intense live activations. We're talking like on-demand embroidery, on-demand laser engraving, multi-day events, festivals, you name it. But Justin, like you always did live printing, right? When did you like
start
to chase it really hard? Like when did it really become a part of the business and what was that decision? Cause like, it sounds like a clusterfuck.
Sure. Yeah, it's really not, but it really is too. So, okay. I think in The first one we did is random, right? The first one we did, I believe, was 2011 or 2012. And it was a pretty big event actually, but it was Discover, like the credit card has an HQ near here. They approached us about doing like a big corporate party and printing live. And we're like, sure, you know, okay, that sounds cool. So we did that and it went well. It was just screen printing. It was pretty simple. I think actually we were doing two different multicolor designs. We don't really mess with multicolor as much now, but no, it went well. I think it was something where after that event, it was kind of like, okay, this is super cool. Like, this is fun. We used to do a lot of classes at our shop. We're like, and I guess like we did these Ryanet classes every month or every couple months for a bit, but we also used to do these kind of like small, like maybe there'd be like 12 people or so, where we would have like maybe a local brewery, like bring by like a keg, and we would have like sort of like, you know, just literally it was like a hangout and do like kind of DIY printing and like these parties. So we always like sort of like embraced like printing with people. But that Discover Card event was, for me, it was like, hey, this is like something that I think is really cool. And I also looked around at the time and was kind of like, you know, there's not really a whole lot of people doing it. Like at the time, the only company that I remember seeing was Hit and Run, which, by the way, I don't know if you've ever talked to like the owner of that company, Brandy Flowers, but I love that guy. I think we're like soulmates. So, definitely. Well, you guys should have him on the show. He's cool. Cool dude. Big conspiracy theorist.
How do you decide to dive into doing that versus, you know, cause it's a totally different business. As much as you're making the same output, I mean, that
totally, the rest is pretty different. So what happened is we did the one, it was cool. And then I was kind of like, okay, I like this. So I think it was something pretty basic at first. Like I added it to the website, like, okay, we do live printing, kind of just trying to like see if people come to our site, maybe they'll hire us again. I think we got, Bruce, I think we scored your wedding, right? That was like, that was our big break.
So, low budget break.
Yeah. So we did some local stuff. Like I remember we did some things that like, you know, first of all, we did, I think, what a lot of other printers do. We started using live printing ourselves as a way to kind of like put our name out there. So we tried to attend more like street festivals and like kind of like local events where we would bring a press and kind of do like barrel maker stuff. But we also were trying to advertise it, but I was really trying to figure out how to get more business from it. Cause it wasn't enough. We did this cool event at like a popular gym downtown, and like that went really well. We got like, I remember we got a couple like bat mitzvahs, like some pretty small local Chicago stuff. But I really wanted to figure out how to do more of it. And I was like okay, I think barrel maker already is kind of a bad name for anything, you know, except for yesterday. I did have this idea where I was like, I think we should fucking pivot and make barrels. Like I don't know if there's demand for that, but I think we have the right domain. So it did occur to me yesterday.
60 minutes about that.
So when did you buy liveprinting.com? When did you buy liveprinting.com?
So it was like around 2014, I think. I tried to get it and it was something ridiculous. How much did I actually get it for?
Like, what was the ask at first? And then what'd you get it for?
The ask was fucking crazy. It was like $100,000. Like at first they were like $100,000. I was like, how is like $100? Like it was like such a big, I had the same thing trying to get barrelmaker.com too, though, where it was like, why do you guys even want this? But, I ended up getting it for, I'd have to double check, but I think it was 2000. So it ended up like, you know,
I find that with domains too, they love throwing out the craziest number at first and then, yeah. You know,
well, I wanted barrelmaker for a while. I wanted barrelmaker just to make my email a little shorter because I hated like barrelmaker printing. So I was like, I just want to pull that out. So they
said that was a similar pivot thing, point though, but like having that domain, you know, helped grow the business.
Yeah. More. So I was trying to get the domain. It took me about 6 months. Like it took a while. Like I was, cause at first it was way, like it really was like, they're like, we want $100,000. I'm like, I can't do that. You know, like that was like way out of my league. But I did know that I had the vision for, you know, the way that we're doing it now is like pretty much how I wanted it to be. Like, it's actually really cool, that it's reached the point of what I was trying to get it to be. It took a while, but eventually I got like an email basically that was like, hey, I think it was around $2,000, but they're like, basically, if you buy this right now, we'll do it at this price. And I was just like, done, you know? And so I got it. And, you know, I think the first kind of thing we did, I built out the site. I worked with this agency, and at first I think it was a little too, it started really, really colorful. Like, I worked with these guys that were like illustrators and like artsy, and I think we went too bold. So like, our core customer base on the live side is like, you know, it's big agencies, it's really big brands, like very, you know, it's we're pretty white labeled actually. Like, it's, I'm kind of surprised with how many of our customers are okay with letting us have our branding there. But I think they're okay with having our branding there because it's like, it is just like a domain. It's like liveprinting.com. It's pretty subtle. But the first thing we did was I built it out like kind of these really colorful, you know, bold choices. I thought it looked cool, but when I started to go to the events and, you know, you're like, oh, like here's like Nike or Toyota or Gatorade or Facebook or whatever, Snapchat, like all these like bigger brands. It's like, we can't compete with them. We need to blend in with them. Like, we're there to support them. So, I guess my point is, once we got the domain, we did grow, like we grew substantially. I pushed, you know, SEO. I was really putting money into like AdWords. I was reaching out to more agencies. I felt like more confident now being able to push live printing because of having the domain itself, honestly. Mm-hmm.
So AdWords and like, SEO were the big drivers.
Yeah, those are big. And I think, yeah, for sure. I mean, and you know, I still stand by, like, on the barrel maker side and live printing side, like word of mouth is still always the best. Like, people who see us at an event, still, but like, you know, that's where we still get the most customers. It's like someone like was like, oh, I was at this trade show and we saw one of your activations and like, this is perfect for us. Or, I mean, that comes up the most. People who move from one company to another is also big. That's a big detractor too. That sucks, but it also helps. Like, you know, if you have someone who like we see that a lot where we're like, oh man, we worked with this company a bunch, or we work with like this person with like Toyota example, for example, and they hired us for like 40 events. But now they went over, you know, to some other agency, and like, if you're lucky, you keep the old one and you get the new one, right? Because they're like, they bring you on board to the new one. But sometimes you lose the old one too, which sucks. So,
have you dove into an expansion tactic? So let's call this like a department, or just for simplicity purposes, like, so we've got live printing as a department. You talked about contract and retail. Have you done something where it didn't work and you had to kill it off?
Yeah. I mean, I actually think a couple things, like I just said with our website, like even though it wasn't a direct kill, like getting rid of that branding was crucial, like rebranding live printing to be more professional and less bold and really try and make sure that it's clear that we could be a white label company, made a big difference. Like, I really do think that separated us from being kind of like on an amateur level to like a real like professional level. Because again, like we do in-store activations all the time. And if you're in like a Lululemon type store, like they want it to be clean, you know, clean. Even if like, I mean, a lot of times an agency or a marketing person will cover all the branding to make sure it's like in line with their branding. But if you're able to present an option that's like, doesn't cost them additional money, right, to do new branding, but could also still fit in aesthetically with like kind of what they're offering, I think that's a win-win for everybody. So we focused on,
I know you've done like embroidery on and off a few times, for example.
Yeah. Embroidery is good. I would say the thing that we killed off, the thing that didn't work, is in-house fulfillment. So like, that was the thing that we were losing money on it. Yeah, it was bad. And I think Steven, you guys do it differently than us. And I think you're on like a much higher level, but like for us, what happened is like we had our embroidery space, right, full of bins and skew, you know, whatever, all of our fulfillment stuff. We suck at it. We're so bad. We lost so many good accounts because of the fulfillment side of things. Like, we would, fulfill stuff wrong, fulfill stuff like, you know, take too long to check it in. It's just really hard to do that properly. And I think a lot of print shops try and get into fulfillment. I think it's easy to be like, well, let's get into fulfillment for this one customer, right? Because like, you know, we'll just help them out. But then what happens when you have like 30 of those and you need a whole separate warehouse for it? Then what happens? Like, we've had a few pretty big customers that we like had to build out for, and then we lost that their business. And even just the time and process it takes to like get all their stuff packed up again is really...
How much time and money do you think you wasted on that? And so we went down that rabbit hole as well. We tried to do our own inventory, do our own. We worked with a bunch of different tools. We had, you know, and then we ended up using a 3PL. We only do on-demand fulfillment that is like for products at Campus Inc. That's all we do. But like, how much time do you think you wait and time and money do you think you wasted trying to pull that off?
I mean, at least 200,000, you know, like, I mean, even if I just look at salaries for the people who were doing it, you know, we did it. I mean, I think we had about 2 solid years really trying to make it work because it felt like, you know, it felt like that was something that print shops had to really be able to do to like stay relevant within the industry. I don't know if you feel that way. Like, and I, you know, this isn't like this kind of weird.
Was this a COVID thing? That's when it started or?
Yeah, for sure. Cause I think COVID was definitely when, you know, we all got on board with like doing more, you know, fundraiser stores and, you know, building up like pre-order stores and sending out. And we've always had like some like corporate customers who would be like, hey, I'm ordering, you know, 500 or 1,000 shirts and we want to like send them individually. But that's not the stuff that's hard. It's like it's the pick and pack. We started having some ASI companies using us for kitting and, you know, like building boxes and things like that. So now we're like storing like, you know, pallets of boxes and then we're pulling like, okay, 8 of these items and then they're sending us stuff, but also like what happens if something that they ship us is wrong? It was just way above our heads, you know? And so
what was the decision to cut it off?
There was a specific customer that we lost that we had for a long time as a print customer. And when we lost her, I was just like this, it was like kind of the final straw for me, honestly. Like it was like one of like probably eight accounts that we ended up losing because of it. And these are accounts.
So it detracted from the custom side.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's hard to be like, when you have a customer that's so frustrated with one of your services, it's hard to be like, well, keep us for this one still, you know? And so, so what happened is there was one of the customers, had us ship our stuff to like a local place that does fulfillment. And so I was like, hey, this is like, it's like only about 2 minutes from my house. So I kind of, you know, would like sometimes like ride my motorcycle, like kind of around their parking lot to sort of like scope it out. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to hit them up. Like, so I hit them up. I was like, hey, like we get a lot of fulfillment customers. We're really bad at fulfillment. We want to be able to offer it through us because we have customers that like, they do want to have the ease of use of being able to place the orders with us and then have it stored and have it shipped out. You know, that's something that we want to be able to accommodate. So we formed a partnership with like a local company that has, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 square feet versus our, like, I think over there we had like 6,000 square feet. So, I mean, it's like,
so you could still offer it, but they manage it and do it all.
I guess the way it works now is like our customers that we do fulfillment for, they place their orders. We have like we either use our van or, a local courier. As soon as order's done, it goes over there. It all gets checked in. It's white label. So I'm sharing this with, you know, industry. Hopefully our customers aren't all listening, but a lot of our customers don't know that it's like not in-house, but at the same time, it's like, I try to explain this to people. It's like, even though it's not technically in-house, like I could be there in 15 minutes and I could like go in there and I could go find a garment if I needed
to. But that's their specialty. Yeah. So I guess like 100%. For a shop listening to this, don't get into fulfillment if you are thinking about
it. Why'd you get out of it, Steven?
Same reason. We were awful at it.
That was costing so much money. So now we make money off of it. I will say we make very little off of it. Like our fulfillment, it's still like a, it's kind of a pass through service to like really keep, be able to like appeal to like our customers. But we, I don't believe that we've lost a customer since we've switched it over. And then also they're, you know, they actually do ship within 24 hours, even though like we would try, they do it. They have like, much better tech behind it in terms of like knowing, you know, like just being able to manage all of your inventory. They have like all the right conveyors and picking equipment. We keep like, you know, all the custom branding and everything there. So
like that's hard to get to as the end goal without having going through the pain of the first step. Like as both, dude, the first step both sucks. Of you guys have gone through. But just as like, even if you started on step two, you'd think probably, well, if we brought it in house, we could XYZ, we could make more on it. Maybe we could do this better or so on without appreciating the full scope of it.
And my thought was too, like, you know, we could always take it back. It's like, it's not like if we wanted to, we could pull all of our stuff out of there. That would be, that'd be a terrible idea, but it's not like we're committed to like leaving everything there forever. It's just like, that's literally all they do. And to be honest, it's turned out really well. They've like, they've now given us customers that do fulfillment with them who need decorating. So like they've given us leads or made introductions to like some companies that need like embroidery done or whatnot. I know you did just bring up embroidery. Embroidery is something that we brought on years ago and we killed it off. I think we brought it on with old equipment and not the proper training. So it wasn't, that was a similar thing. It wasn't going as well as subbing out, but embroidery was a little bit different because we still had every day we get embroidery orders. So that just, I think the difference between that was bringing it in the proper way. Like I bought new machines and I hired someone to come and train for like 2 weeks. I brought in more trainers. We set it up at another facility. So we built it out across the street. So it's like not in the print shop.
When you're making a business decision to invest in something like this, right? Like I'm going to invest in fulfillment, or I'm going to gamble on embroidery, or I'm going to gamble on live. Do you have a level of comfort knowing that if this flops, I'm not going to go broke?
Yeah, for sure. I don't like do it like totally willy-nilly. I set like thresholds. Like I actually have kind of a similar thing. We started like a tote bag company like 6 months ago or so. And it's called Second Chances and the website is secondchancetotes.com. And you know, part of the reason we started this is we've done really massive tote bag orders for like since like 2011. Like we used to do these like 100,000 plus orders, you know, every year. So we have a really good relationship with a manufacturer, who makes bags for like, I'm just like a crazy scale and they do really good work. And so, I don't think the tote bag market is actually all that big. And we wanted to focus on kind of bringing in like an in-house bag that's, a more sustainable option. Mostly the original thought was to bring it in, as like an in-house product that we could use for our live customers, right? Like we do enough tote bags live throughout the year alone to just be able to like inventory and use that for that. So, I kind of decided to like start this small company, just cause we've been making totes for a while. And I brought over like my first kind of like initial inventory thing that I brought was like 70,000 pieces. And we had a customer right when, and like manufacturing overseas and like doing things like that, it's like, it takes a long time, right? It takes like 4 months basically from when you like place an order till it like lands, because it's got to like sit on a boat forever, you know? And so, but anyways, I brought in like 70,000 pieces and literally had a customer buy 55,000 of them right when they came. So I like was ready to like, I was going to launch it and then was like out of inventory basically. So I've kind of like, that was like cool, but like kind of not, like cool and not cool at the same time. So we're, we're kind of right now we're waiting on more and more inventory, but I think we have about 20 or so thousand pieces, and we only have two styles right now that we focused on, like just trying to make a bag that's actually really, really nice. And it's recycled cotton. And then we're kind of like doing some other stuff sustainable wise. Like we're a part of 1% for the planet. So 1% of all of our revenue goes to that organization. But we also partnered with this other company that's like basically works with, you know, people who are like incarcerated that are like trying to get back into the workforce. And so we're also like giving some of the proceeds to that, which kind of aligns with the whole like second chances theme. So that's kind of the goal. And one thing where we're taking a risk in terms of, you know, while we talk about that is like we're putting a lot of money right now into building inventory in that. So that's obviously like, it's a little bit risky. It eats our, you know, at like money that could be in the bank, but we're also, we're going to move our facility, our embroidery shop, in November. And when we move it, we're getting a bigger space so that we could add, an in-house natural dye setup so that we're going to start by doing natural dyeing of our bags and then potentially roll that out as something that we offer to like our retail customers.
So it's interesting. You took a product that you consume a ton of and then essentially extended it, right? And so like, that's kind of like, I think it's called dog food, right? Where it's like, you are the largest consumer of this and now you're going to extend this to others. But what's crazy is you only have 4 products on the website and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason. Okay. So like, if you go through like, I don't know, we've all done, I assume you've done a good amount of tote bag orders. Maybe, I don't know. But like, if you look at print shops doing tote bag orders, it's like 90% of them are like a basic tote, right? Like it's a pretty standard kind of like 14 by 15 tote bag, right? And then some people will do like what's called like a market tote, which is like a little bit bigger. So we focus on like just those two. You know, it's like, there's no reason for us. It costs so much money to like build inventory in these other SKUs. We are going to add one more style, like a bigger gusseted style. And we're going to over time try and do these like in-house dye programs. So we're able to like build out some colorways. But again, it's like, if I look at our data and like I said, we do a lot of tote bags. If I look at our personal data, it's like we have like one style of bag that we clearly do more than like every other bag, which is a pretty basic size. And I would say like 95% of those orders are either natural or black. So that's like what we're focusing on. It's like
what does in-house dye actually mean? Like I've seen when we've done the Bell and Canvas tours or something, there's these, you know,
you get like big washing machines.
They even send them outside, you know, to some other dye house thing. Everyone always says the dye house. I don't think I've ever seen the actual dye house. What is it?
You can dye them in barrels.
Right. That's a good idea. Well, that's the thing is like with like All Made and stuff, when we go to like the dye house in LA, it's like, it's just so massive. Like, it's like, that's a totally, it's kind of like how we just talked about with like fulfillment. So our goal isn't to do that crazy, like scale. It's really like, we want to be able to do like small batch dyeing. Like, so being able to do like, you know, maybe like 50 bags at a time, nothing crazy.
But is it like a washing machine type of thing?
It's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like a big washing machine that you could fill with like, we're going to focus on natural dyes. So like things like marigold and indigo, onion peels, avocado pits, like all that kind of like coffee beans, you know, like stuff like that. But yeah, you're basically like washing it in dye. And then
what does that cost? So like one machine?
Yeah, I'm in the process of kind of figuring out what to get, 'cause I've seen it all over the place. I'm budgeting like around 50 to like 100,000 for it, like depending on, I don't totally know what we need yet. So that's something like, I actually just hired someone specifically for that side of the brand to kind of like start to look into that a little bit more and piece that together.
So this is a big bet.
It is and it isn't. Like the equipment, if we go too high on it, is probably not good, but like the bags aren't as risky because like we were just saying, like we'll sell them. My goal is to open it up to more and more print shops though, because they really are nice bags and they're like, you know, they're there's a couple little nuancey things. Like, I mean, the recycle, we're doing some stuff with like how they're sewn and like the handles to try and make them a little bit like higher fashion. They're both gusseted right now on the bottom, because we were able to like essentially add some gusseting, which gives them like more space, but doesn't really add a ton to the price. So, yeah, we're trying to get into that.
Kind of like what you did, like what Atonal did with headwear with Relentless Merch, right? Very, very similar. I think they're starting to take off now.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, I love those guys. And I think it is like a very similar thing. And I like party doing bags is like, you know, there's not a million sizes and whatnot, you know, like you don't have to do same with hats. Like it's kind of nice to do like an accessory. Like if you get in a t-shirts, it's like, shit, you got like 8 SKUs for every, you know, color or whatever. So it's like, it just gets crazy.
It's interesting because if you think about the business, like when you and Aaron were running it to where it's at now, the new growth opportunities are derivatives of Barrel Maker, but like the bag company and live printing could overtake Barrel Maker, but that's really like you chasing it and playing. And I think you have the ability to do that because you've been doing Profit First for 7 years or 8 years.
Yeah, I think that definitely helps a lot for sure. And, you know, live printing, sorry to like bounce around, but like the way that you described it, like it's just, I don't know if you said it's just a clusterfuck or a pain in the ass or whatever it is. It's like, it's much easier at a larger scale than it is at a small scale. And I kind of saw that like early on. I was like, well, if we could get to a point where we have like, you know, like our live team is pretty big at this point. Like we have about 8 people full time who just are on like, you know, that side of things. And then we have all the people who travel, and then we also collab with shops. So it's a pretty, like, there's a lot of people working on it on a daily basis. And it's like, for example, like if you're, let's say you're doing one event in New York City every 2 to 3 months, that's hard to plan for, right? But if you're doing events in New York City like twice a week, it's like, well, okay, you could like keep equipment out there. You start using the same people over and over. Like you get more and more people on board with wanting to do it because they can make it a full-time job. You know, so like we kind of have this like, I know like we work with a lot of print shops. That's kind of where we tend to like find people because that's our community. But we have people who have worked at print shops that now that's all they do is travel for us, you know, like full time. And we have some people in New York, for example, who like, yeah, obviously they work like all over the East Coast, but like they go literally, I mean, they fly wherever. Our goal is to like keep people as close to the activations as possible. But we also do some pretty big activations where we need like, you know, Las Vegas is our biggest market by far. And we do activations in Las Vegas all the time that are like 25 plus people of staffing. So that's like, you know, we start to get all hands on deck where we're like, okay, well, we need, you know, someone from here that's really solid. We need like our, like a few people who are like, work a lot of events. Then we have like brand ambassadors who maybe are like new and, you know, they're fine because they're under like other like manager types, you know. But then we'll like, we've also had brand ambassadors who it's like, well, now they've worked 20 events and they become like essentially our go-to at a certain point. We're like, well, hey, you know what you're doing for heat pressing. Like, we don't even need like a manager anymore. Like, you can manage it.
Who built out the entire work? Like, it's almost like you guys are a traveling carnival circus, like.
Yeah, right? Dude. We have a really good Airtable set up for it. It's like, all of our road cases are logged and like we know like where they're all, everything's air tagged. We have like we know like what's where, when it's coming back. We recently like opened a West Coast facility with like our friends at Calamucho. So we're like partnered up with them now to like, we have, you know, a full time dude over there who's working out of that facility to like receive and basically like the gist of it is like we have a ton of these road cases that we've built out for laser engravers or embroidery machines or heat presses or screen print presses. And, you know, transit is hard. So you might get a press that comes back and it's the clamps on it are broken. Embroidery machines are always broken. Fuck, dude. Embroidery is the worst.
How did you get like one employee that like is on the like flight deck of all of this to like build this beautiful machine? Because like,
yeah, kind of. Yeah. So I took our best. I don't know who listens. I took one of our best employee here, and that's her core job. She's the activations manager. So you guys should have her on the show actually. So I think Bruce, you've met Rachel before, right?
Yeah, but like, Rachel's been with you for a long time.
She's been with us for a long time. Yeah. She's so smart and she's so like good at just, you know, when you hire someone and like, actually here was like the coolest thing about hiring her. I used to do the separations, you know, like when Barrel Maker first started, it's like, I learned how to do the steps and I would do the steps. And I hired her just to kind of help like do admin stuff. And one day she's like, yo, like, can you just show me what you're doing? And I showed her like one time and all of a sudden it's like, I never asked her. She just took over doing the steps. It was like, oh, you did that already? She was like, yeah. You know, she just finds the things that need to be done. And so for a long time, her job ultimately became like anything that could potentially fall through the cracks. It's like she like made sure it didn't. So when live started to pick up more and more, she just like took it over. Was like, you know, it's like, oh, we have to, cause I'm like, cool, we got this event, like, awesome. Like, how do I get another one? And she's like, who's working it? You know, like, are we going to pay them? Like, how much are we going to pay them? Like, so over time, we started to standardize everything. It's like, we standardized our pay. We like built a system for, you know, just like, well, building up a network of shops that we work with, of specific like people that we work with, of brand ambassadors we work with, like what are our, you know, how much are we going to spend on shipping, what hotels, like what budgets do we have for flights, things like that. So it's like, you know, and eventually like she couldn't do that anymore. So then it's like we couldn't handle that on our own. So then we kind of took like our next like Barrel Maker account manager. And it's like, we trained her to like also start to book live events and work with customers so that she's able to book events so that Rachel doesn't have to book all the events anymore, you know? And then it's like, okay, well now the two of them could book events while Rachel's able to focus on staffing. And then we took our production manager from Barrel Maker and made her the, event production manager, but you can't really be a production manager on site. If you're doing like hundreds of events every year, that person can't go to every event.
Justin, so, what, because you have so much going on, it's just like contract, retail, live, tote bag, in-house dying. Like, have you thought about Barrel Maker in 5 years or even like a year? Like, let's just say some point in the future, like, what do you think is the ideal Barrel Maker? What does it look like? And I'm actually curious in this question, what is your role in like what you do day to day look like?
Yeah, I need to dabble in lots of things to stay focused. I'm really like, I don't do well if I only have one thing to focus on.
We see
so, that. So yeah. So like, I think to be honest, like I'm not crazy involved on like Barrel Maker itself. Like, you know, like I don't go in production a whole lot. Like I don't even really, like if our production manager has a question, it's not even usually like coming to me. So I think like on a day to day, I'm not, it's a pretty small part of my day other than reaching out to like customers, you know?
No, but like, what do you think you'd want the business to look like? Like, is it this like super vertically integrated, you know, company that manufactures and dyes, sells and activates?
No, I want to. So my goal is to split them up a little bit more, to be honest. Like I think the tote bag company, I'm going to split up pretty soon because I don't want to like, my goal isn't to like compete with print shops. My goal is actually to set, bring a product to market that I think like printers could use. That's like a nice product and at a good price point. So my current focus is kind of like two things. It's building out this tote bag brand and actually splitting that off into a separate business. So that's kind of like something I'm working on right now. And then on the other side, the majority of my time is really spent on the growth of live printing, because I'm seeing it grow so much. I'm working a lot with, like, we have a full-time developer. And so I work a lot on this, like, software side, where I do, like, a lot of the front end type stuff, where I'm like, I want it to look this way, or we have maybe an activation coming up that we need to, like, integrate something with one of our clients, and then working with him to, like, make that integration. But what I'm trying to do over the next few years is see if there's a way to, like, really kind of bridge this gap with live printing and print on demand, and kind of, like, continue to, like, turn, not like, I mean, cause live printing is print on demand in some ways too. So I'm trying to see if there's a way to, like, utilize our software and set up to, like, be able to, like, kind of continue to bridge that gap also, so that live printing and our print on demand setup becomes sort of like one. And I'm not quite, like, I'm still, like, a little bit, like, hazy on that, but that's where I, like, am trying to, like, spend a little of my time, because I'm seeing in our industry, like, the retail orders, like, are going down. Like, small, we're not seeing 50 piece orders like we used to. Like, we're not seeing 30 piece orders. I think that DTF and, like, print on demand and, you know, all that kind of, all the ways that people could order 20 shirts easily, or, like, just buy a heat press and then buy transfers and do it at home, is eating away at those, like, those good orders.
Oh, you think, like, all the startup, you know, heat press garage shops, let's call it, are soaking up those sub 50 shirt orders?
I think right now contract printing is keeping Barrel Maker doing okay. Our orders, like, in production, are much bigger this year.
Because you're doing contract.
Yeah, because I think the orders we're seeing are the ones that are, like, that people can't do at home. They're the 500 plus pieces, which is great for screen printing, but it's also it is lower margin, you know, and it's like, it's not the same as when you have, like, you know, someone paying $14 a shirt for, you know, 35 or 50 shirts, versus, like, when you have these customers that are just, like, providing the shirts and they're paying, like, you know, let's say, like, under $2 or something. So I think we're lucky to have, like, diversity in our customer base, but I do think that if we didn't have live printing right now, like, kind of, like, doing really well, I don't think the Barrel Maker side this year would be down.
Huh. Interesting. Do you think the contract printing also, like, is that financially viable for you guys? Like, is it profitable for you guys, or is it churning dollars?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I think we've always been, like, a hybrid. So I think it's all right. Our contract rates aren't, like, you know, they're not amazing. Like, our pricing generally is, like, we're not the lowest. Like, I think we're a little lower than we used to be, just because, like, we're trying to stay more aggressive right now. And, like, I feel like there's more competition than ever. But, like, really our focus has always been on being reasonably priced within the industry, but also, like, trying to have really good quality. And I would say, like, more than good quality, like, our real focus is on being easy to work with. Like, we have customers that order from us every day, and, like, yeah, we might charge a little bit more, but, like, we do, like, whatever we can to make sure our customers are, like, taken care of. Like, if we have to bump something ahead of schedule, if we have to get pictures, if we have to split ship, if we have to, like, make a change that would cost money, we never go back and say, like, hey, this is going to cost more money, or, like.
But it sounds like also it was good that you guys were diversified in a way, because you're saying that you do see slowness in the smaller orders.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I do. Yeah. And we brought DTF in house too, so that's helping a little bit. And, you know, like, that's actually also saving us a lot of money on the live printing side, because we were ordering so many transfers and now we can make them, which saves a lot of money. That was Steven's idea, because Steven loves DTF more than anyone I know.
DTF, Steven.
Definitely.
But okay, can I bring up two really quick points about live printing?
Yeah. And Justin, or Steven, sorry, if you need to jump, I know.
I got 7 minutes.
Okay. Bring up 2 points, rapid points.
Rapid. I think that like people, when they think of live printing too, don't totally understand it the way that it's like utilized. Like I think a lot of people are just like, oh, like why would you just like set up and print shirts there? And it's like, that's like some events, but like there's some really cool ways that people utilize it. Like we did this like event, for Amazon last year, and they utilized on-site die sub basically to onboard people specifically into a platform. And so what happened is like they had to get onboarded onto this platform to be able to come to us. And then once they were onboarded, it generated like a QR code that we could use to die sub these like zipper pulls and give out like this really high end, jacket. Right. And that was like, it was a massive activation, but we onboarded 17,000 people like by doing that, you know, is like working that into an activation. And so I think like there's, yeah, there's like definitely like these events where it's like, hey, just get the shirt. Do you want this one or this one or whatever? But there's like a lot of like, we've seen some really cool, you know, we did one last week with like Pacifico where like they had a big event where you like could bring your dog and like get like a dog tag made there custom. And then they had these cool bandanas and we embroidered like the dog's name on them. And it was like just a way to like really engage, you know, their customer base. And so I think like it's far beyond just, you know, doing t-shirts, as like giveaways and whatnot. And then my second thing real fast is like, we are starting to do this a little bit. And since there's so many print shops that listen to the show, like we've had print shops now that are like, hey, we have a customer who's like interested in live printing, but we don't know what to charge or we're not like totally sure how to do it. Like, can you help us out with it? And we've sort of developed this, like, it's not like a program, but it's something where we've worked with shops now a few times and like could totally do more of this where we're like, hey, we'll book it for you. And then we'll essentially hire you to work it and we'll make sure that you have everything because we have such a solid process for like getting the event booked because of all like the checklists and processes that we have with like, that's our core. It's a core business offering for us. So if you're like a local shop and like, let's say like another local company is like, we want to do this event. It's like what we're seeing sometimes is these local print shops take it on and they don't charge enough money and they don't prepare right. And they end up like kind of losing money on it. And it makes live printing in general look bad. Whereas like we could come in, charge more money, basically give like a commission to that shop and hire the shop at like a good rate to do the event. It's white label. So it's like the, it's not like they're like advertising for us. You're usually there at the benefit of the company that hires you anyways. So it's kind of been a win-win across the board. And something that like, if there's shops that are like interested in the live printing element, but not all of the hassles that come with like figuring out like what you need. I mean, we get like insurance. We do have equipment that's like very shippable. We have like videos and our production manager for events does like a Zoom with every single person that works an event to like go through the details of that event. So we make it like very, very easy and approachable. And it's something maybe to consider if you're like a shop that like is approached to do live printing and kind of hesitant on how to pull it off.
Justin Moore, Barrel Maker Printing.
Profit first.
Liveprinting.com.
Liveprinting.com. Totes.
Bruce Ackerman.
Coffee.
.com.
On that note.
Chris, please call that, please.
Oh, no,
wait. Professors, thank you so much for joining.
What?
I used to be like on the Printavo site and I had a lot of fans. And now that you like, you know, did your whole sellout thing, I'm not on there. Do you have any poll? Could I get back on there? I miss signing autographs.
I'll see what we can do. Thanks, Printhusters. Welcome back. And thank you for listening again. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.